you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Tonight on The Readout.
So to be clear, my hold is still in place. The hold will remain in place as long as the Pentagon's illegal abortion policy remains in place. If the Pentagon lifts the policy, then I will lift my hold. It's easy as that.
Tommy Tuberville says last night's confirmation of our new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff means Democrats blinked on his blockade of military promotions. What he really means is that he was outmaneuvered by Chuck Schumer and caved on his big, harmful stand on abortion. Plus, former Joint Chiefs Chairman General Mark Milley unloads on his former boss, Donald Trump, saying he did all he could do to stop the man from trashing the U.S. Constitution. And later, you know her, you love her, the fabulous Leslie Jones joins me to talk about her hilarious new memoir. But we begin tonight with the reality that the world we live in is hanging by a thread as international leaders wrap up their annual General Assembly at the United Nations. The organization's chief delivered a dire warning to leaders from around the world, one we would all be well advised to heed.
Our world is becoming unhinged. Geopolitical tensions are rising. Global challenges are mounting. And we seem incapable of coming together to respond.
He also told world leaders that humanity has opened the gates of hell by unleashing worsening heat waves, floods, and wildfires seen around the world. Millions of people are dying because of our indifference, an indifference fueled by our addiction to oil. And one of the main countries profiting off of that addiction is Saudi Arabia, which is using its wealth to whitewash its atrocious human rights track record, which includes likely responsibility for sawing to death U.S. resident journalist, and being home to the 18 of the perpetrators of the deadliest terrorist attack ever to take place on U.S. soil. The man behind the mission is Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who since taking control of the country has launched a financial and media campaign to remake the country's image. Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund, known as the Public Investment Fund, is buying major stakes in American companies like Uber, Live Nation, Meta, and Starbucks. They're also investing billions of dollars in LIV Golf and the Grand Prix to add to their existing investments in U.S. media. And while the Saudis are buying access and power, hashtag Jared Kushner, the Ukrainians are literally dying for their right to live free from the oppressive grasp of Russia and their megalomaniacal leader, Vladimir Putin. As their fighters continue to die on the front lines, President Zelensky continues to plead for the world's help because, as he says, his men are dying to stop Putin and a third world war. President Zelensky took that message directly to the American Congress, where most Republicans have refused to help support the cause of freedom. He has a daunting task because he has to convince the unserious, unhinged MAGA wing of the Republican Party, a party that pretends to be about freedom but seems to prefer Putin and autocracy, that his cause is worth fighting for. While he would not share the details of his conversation, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer did.
There was a single sentence that summed it all up, and I'm quoting him verbatim. Mr. Zelensky said, if we don't get the aid, we will lose the war.
What he's up against is a stunningly feckless party, more interested in pleasing an alleged criminal and serial liar, Donald Trump, who is currently holed up in his Howard Hughes-like estate in Florida. To wit, Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who has failed to display any leadership skills or desire to actually govern for all of the American people, proudly rebuffed Zelensky's request to address a joint session of Congress.
Zelensky asked for a joint session. We just didn't have time putting the bipartisan group of members together to meet with him. No different than we did with anybody else.
America, this is the Speaker of the House of Representatives and the leader of a party that is actively tying one hand behind democracy's back. Think I'm being hyperbolic? Just take, for example, what his caucus did earlier today. They actually sunk a procedural vote to consider their own $826 billion Pentagon spending bill, a bill that would fund the people who are defending the country. It's so bad that even the normally both sides-y media can't both sides it. 8 months in, Republicans have proved that they are incapable of governing. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is egging this incompetence on from the sidelines, urging the Republican Party in a faux tweet to shut down the government and tank our economy because, frankly, he's terrified of going to prison. So he's demanding that his Republican lackeys defund Special Counsel Jack Smith. And he seems to genuinely believe that House Republicans can put an end to the investigation into his alleged crimes. At this point, this party is a complete shite show, and that is a cleaned up quote from a member of their caucus. They are insistent on bringing this country to its economic knees while watching the world burn. While that happens, they want to pass tax cuts to help the super rich keep getting richer and richer and bust unions that are fighting for a fair wage. Frankly, at this point, they don't care about the American people. They care about scoring political points and getting clips run on Fox.
Does the conference seem governable at this point? By anybody?
No, to be honest.
The worst part of this fiasco? Kevin McCarthy has sent his troops home for the weekend. Instead of job well done, it's job not done. I'm joined now by Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren, member of the Senate Banking, Finance, and Armed Services Committees. Senator, thank you so much for being here. And where to begin? I guess we'll begin with the leader of the Republican Party, who's doing it from Florida, Donald Trump, who has demanded, he said it's the last chance to stop the political prosecutions against him, meaning funding the government and the requirement, which has to begin in the House. He wants that to include defunding Jack Smith and the special prosecutor, and the investigations against him. And if not, he says, shut the government down. Your thoughts?
Right. So, look, we've been talking about these extremist Republicans in the House of Representatives for several months now as they keep making different demands, and every time some demands are met by Kevin McCarthy, they change what their demands are. And a lot of people think, well, you know, they just don't know what they want. They know exactly what they want. They want to do whatever they can to help Donald Trump. And that means right now, shut down the government because it will impose pain on the American people. It will be damaging to the U.S. economy, and it will undermine us all around the world. And they believe, and Donald Trump believes, that that advances the likelihood that Donald Trump will be elected in 2024. So all of this has real purpose to it. The scary part is that so far, Kevin McCarthy is letting them run the country and move us in a direction of a government shutdown that really will do real damage to Americans, to people all around the world.
You know, it seems so far that Senate Republicans have been very hands-off in all of this, despite all of the catastrophic implications of a government shutdown, which will hurt their states just as much as it'll hurt Republicans' districts in the House and Democrats' districts. Is there a plan B? Because spending bills obviously must emerge from the House. But is there some conversation about what to do if they shut the government down? What then?
You know, this is the problem. It takes both houses of Congress, the House and the Senate, to agree on a spending bill, whether it's a short term or whether it's the overall budget for next year, in order to keep the government funded. There's no way around the decision that Kevin McCarthy has to make about whether he leaves a handful of extremists in charge who are just hell-bent on imposing pain on the American people so that Donald Trump can improve his chances of getting elected in 2024, or whether Kevin McCarthy is going to say enough of this. I've got plenty of other Republicans, plus a lot of Democrats, who would vote in favor of a reasonable spending bill just to keep the government up and running, keep our economy going, and keep us doing the actual business of the government. That's what we should be doing.
You know, one of the pieces of business that needs to be done is to pass a defense authorization bill. Now, this there was a negotiated bill that was a done deal. It was just a procedural vote to push it through. That has not happened. Meanwhile, on the Senate side, Tommy Tuberville has been grinding the process of military promotions to a halt. That ended a little bit today. There now will be a replacement for the Joint Chiefs Chair, Mark Milley. What is the plan there? Because we've done the math, or actually some folks have done the math. It would take about, 30 days or a couple of months if they're done
longer
one
than
by
that.
One. How long would it take?
Longer than that, actually. Oh, some of the estimates, it's if we go 8 hours a day, 7 days a week, all the way around, people are talking about hundreds of days that would be chewed up with the military nominations. And that's time that we can't spend voting on a budget. It's time we can't spend confirming judges. It's time we can't spend on all of the other nominations that we have as well, like ambassadorships and assistant secretaries of different agencies. But understand this. What Senator Tuberville has done is undermined our national security. He has made America a riskier country now. And don't just take my word for it. Take the word of our active duty military, of our retired military, and even of Republicans who have stepped up and said, this is dangerous for the United States of America. And think what it means. You couldn't ask for better propaganda for our adversaries than the fact that the United States of America cannot get its military leaders into their duty stations so they can actually do their jobs. That's where we are. Now, Senator Tuberville is starting to feel a lot of heat around the Senate and a lot of heat nationally. What we've now seen is that there's a crack that has opened. So last night, and again today, Leader Schumer moved 3 military nominations forward altogether so that we didn't spend days and days on it as the Senate rules would otherwise require. That is a first step in getting this done. But make no mistake, we have to do more. We have more than 300 nominees who are hanging out there, more than 300 military families who are trying to manage homes in two places because they can't get from where they are right now to the next duty station. Children who have not been registered in the right schools. A political football that Senator Tuberville has turned our military into. We have to put a stop to this, and we have to find a way to move all of these people through together. Our national defense depends on moving our military leaders forward and getting Senator Tuberville out of the way.
It seems that what Tuberville is doing, what others are doing, does seem in many instances to entertain, essentially to entertain the viewers of one network, Fox, and other right-wing media. It doesn't seem that there's a governing purpose beyond that, oftentimes. You have called Fox a dangerous, factory of lies and been very blunt in your assessment of the damage that they've done to our democracy. Do you have a comment on the fact that Rupert Murdoch at 92 is now stepping down and is becoming an emeritus and no longer will be running that company?
Rupert Murdoch built a hate-for-profit machine. And that machine has undermined our democracy and done incalculable damage to this nation. I'm glad he's leaving, but I wish he'd never come.
I want to ask you also about Saudi Arabia. You know, Brett Baer at Fox did an interview with Prince Salman. They are laundering their reputation through lots and lots of purchases and investments in everything from golf to you name it. They're throwing money around, including what they gave to Jared Kushner, $2 billion to him, $1 billion to Steve Mnuchin. What are they buying for all that largesse? And what is the U.S., you know, getting out of it? Because it does seem that what they're getting is a laundry that they're calling the United States and our culture.
You know, Joy, I think you think about this exactly the right way. They are trying to find a way to put a prettier face on a lot of horrific actions that both this leader has taken directly and that the kingdom itself has underwritten around the world. And I get it. It'll work in some circles, but I guarantee what they've done so far, not good enough for most people around the world.
And a final question, just to come back to the Senate again, because the person who should be the most influential over someone like a Tommy Tuberville would be Mitch McConnell. He's had some obvious health issues recently and some falls, and we've seen some things happen on camera that were fairly disturbing. Is he in charge? Where is Mitch McConnell? Because he doesn't seem to have been a very prominent figure in pushing back against some of these abuses. And we have a government shutdown potentially in 9 days.
Look, I'm going to put it this way. Senator Tuberville has been enabled by all of the Republicans in the Senate. The Republicans in the Senate have permitted him for 7 months now to block military leaders from going to their posts and doing their work. And they've gone along with it. They've looked the other way when they've been asked about it. They've mumbled and fumbled and let Senator Tuberville continue to inflict growing trouble and pain on our national defense. I put this on the entire Republican Senate caucus. They are the ones who together, under the leadership of Senator McConnell, need to stop this with Senator Tuberville. This has got to end. I was over talking with the folks in NATO just a few weeks ago, and they talked about what it means that we don't actually have anyone over there to lead the delegation. And they talked about how rank matters. You have to have the right person in the room. And when we have someone who's just in an acting position and lower rank, it's a way to say to our allies, you're not serious in this alliance. And our support then wanes at that point. So you can replicate that right now all around the globe. I just can't underscore enough the urgency of stopping Senator Tuberville as he continues to undercut our national security.
Senator Elizabeth Warren, thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
You bet.
And coming up next on The Readout, Republicans are all in a tizzy wondering why they keep getting blamed for trying to shut down the government. I don't know. Maybe it's because they keep trying to shut down the government. The Readout continues after this.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
We are completely dysfunctional.
This is not conservative republicanism. This is stupidity. The idea that we're going to shut the government down when we don't control the Senate, we don't control the White House. These people can't define a win. They don't know how to take yes for an answer. It's a clown show.
House Republicans on the dumpster fire on top of a runway train headed off a cliff that is their caucus. Speaker Kevin McCarthy is running out of options to avoid a government shutdown after ultra-right-wing members smacked down his second attempt this week to move on a Pentagon spending bill. As reality sinks in, some Republicans are accepting their fate without a shred of self-awareness. Idaho Congressman Mike Simpson told Politico, quote, "We always get the blame. Name one time that we've shut the government down and we haven't got the blame." Dude, read your sentence again. You shut the government down. I'm joined now by George Conway, conservative lawmaker and contributing columnist for The Washington Post, and Paul Rieckhoff, founder of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and host of the Independent Americans podcast. I mean, George, I'm going to read that sentence again. Name one time when we've shut the government down that we haven't gotten the blame. I don't know. Name one time that I punched somebody in the face and then I haven't gotten the blame for hurting the person and making them put a scar on their face. That kind of sentiment where Republicans are whining that they're going to get the blame and then they're going to shut the government down. What is going on?
Well, it's even worse than that, because at least in the past, you could figure out something that the Republicans were trying to obtain that made some level of sense, some concrete goal that they had. Maybe it might be a little fuzzy at times. And they were using the threat of a shutdown or refusal to agree to obtain that. That's not what's going on now. And I think that's what these members of Congress are trying to convey. I heard the phrase extreme Republicans, extreme conservatives. This isn't conservative. We've gotten to a stage where conservatives don't support the military, don't support the rule of law. This isn't conservatism. It's nihilism. These are people who want, and it's just basically destruction for destruction's sake. They want to shut down the government because they want to make points and earn and get money from small donors and get on Fox News and get on OAN and get on Newsmax and say, look, we've fought the big government. They're just anti-government for the sake of government, being anti-government without any reasoning about what kind of government they want. And that includes being anti-military and anti-everything. And it's a road to nowhere. It's a road to destruction.
Well, I mean, if you want to talk anti-military, Paul, I mean, I don't know what would be more anti-military than essentially stopping all promotions inside of the military for an unlike thing because you don't like abortion. And the military is not paying for abortions. They're just saying, hey, if you need to travel out of Alabama because it's illegal in Alabama, you can get some, you know, money to travel so that you don't go broke. It's not like military people are getting rich being in the military. They don't have extra money. But he's like, I don't like abortion, so therefore it's shut down. There's reporting that Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, actually went in and confronted him himself. Even that didn't move him. What is happening?
It's radical. It's reckless. It's ridiculous. But it's also coordinated. And you and I have talked a bit about this in the past, Joy. This is not accidental. This is a strategy. I've called it the American insurgency. This is a group of people that want to obstruct, dismantle, overthrow our government. And they're trying to do it in different ways. And Tommy Tuberville has become the leader of this radical group in the Senate that wants to blow up everything. They're kind of like political suicide bombers. They want to go in and achieve their ideological agenda at the expense of anything, to include our military. It's the same guy who supported white nationalism professionalism in the military. And now he and 10 others blocked C.Q. Brown, who's an overwhelmingly qualified American hero for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And I've called him Senator Redneck. I think that's what Tuberville is. He embodies this backward ideology, and he has friends. And 10 of his friends were the only 11 U.S. senators who voted against C.Q. Brown last night. And it's like a laundry list of the most radical and ridiculous members of the Senate. They're calling themselves out. So I give Schumer credit for finally pushing a vote. I think Warren's right. She's finally throwing punches. That's what's been long overdue. And independents like me have been sitting there saying, somebody just stop this madness. And I think they need to go further. Call for Tuberville to resign. Get him out of the Senate. Stop him from endangering our national security and helping our enemies. Because it is bigger than just politics. It's about our national security. And now it's also about international stability. It's also about Ukraine. So it's much bigger than just Tuberville. And it's increasingly dangerous and damaging.
Yeah, I mean, the House side, they're also refusing to fund Ukraine. They want to stop that, too. But I just stay with you for just a minute, Paul, because there is a certain contempt for the military who they claim to support that is at the root of it. And that does come from Trump. I want to read this stunning piece of this Atlantic profile of General Mark Milley, who I think has been really heroic and being very blunt about talking about issues I think that are really, really important. And this is it. At a welcome ceremony at Joint Base Meyer-Henderson Hall across the Potomac River from the Capitol, Milley gained an early and disturbing insight into Trump's attitude towards soldiers. Milley had chosen a severely wounded Army captain, Luis Avila, to sing God Bless America. Avila, who had completed 5 combat tours, had lost a leg in an IED attack in Afghanistan and had suffered 2 heart attacks, 2 strokes, and brain damage as a result of his injuries. To Milley and to 4-star generals across the Army, Avila and his wife, Claudia, represented the heroism, sacrifice, and dignity of wounded soldiers. It had rained that day and the ground was soft. At one point, Avila's wheelchair threatened to topple over. After Avila's performance, Trump walked over to congratulate him, but then said to Milley, within earshot of several witnesses, "Why do you bring people like that here? No one wants to see that, the wounded. Never let Avila appear in public again," Trump told Milley, who, by the way, Milley is going to have him sing at his retirement party. That kind of disgusting attitude toward a wounded veteran, that's Trump. Is that what's infected the party?
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, it's a culture of contempt. It's a culture that he has encouraged. It's a culture that he has seeded all across this country. And it is a movement of people who have contempt for all things honorable and with integrity. And most ridiculously, they've made a consistent focal point our national security and our military. I mean, this is no longer the party of John McCain and Colin Powell and people like that. They would be flabbergasted if they saw where the Republican Party has come now. We're not just Trump, but Tuberville and Ron DeSantis and everyone else has made their number one attack talking point the military. So I think it's also a contrast in where America is right now. You've got like disgusting people with no honor, no integrity, and you've got these really honorable people that are defending democracy and holding the line. And that's Milley and C.Q. Brown and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. And it's gut check time for America. You've got to look at this contrast, and I applaud them for stepping forward. I wish they could speak out more. But in the meantime, we've got to continue to try to elevate those voices when they do start to leak out and hold the line and fight someone like Tuberville who's endangering our national security. He's doing the work of Putin and our enemies for them.
George, you know, I mean, Donald Trump's, that story about Donald Trump, he and Mark Milley are sort of polar opposites on the human spectrum in so many ways. I mean, Milley, you know, was very apologetic after walking almost to that disgusting display outside the White House when Trump wanted to hold a Bible upside down, et cetera, and, you know, admitted it was wrong and has tried to defend the country. What do you make of Donald Trump's attitude in that anecdote there versus Mark Milley?
Well, I mean, they're complete opposites, complete moral opposites. You have one man who is patriotic, who is selfless, who wants to do the best, the right by the country. And you have another person who does not care about the country, does not care about its people, and only cares about himself. I mean, if Donald Trump were to, you know, give a speech to explain what he thinks the country should be doing and what we should be doing for the country, it would be, ask not what you can do for the country. Ask not what the country can do for you. Ask what you and the country can do for me. It's all about him. And that's, you know, he is, I said this earlier on Twitter. I mean, there's no good way to say it. He is scum. And frankly, when I say that, I am insulting scum.
George Conway, subtle as always. Paul Rykoff, equally subtle with your opinions. You guys got to stop being less shy. Thank you both very much. Still to come, my interview with the great Leslie Jones. But first, as the summer of strikes transitions into fall, union workers continue fighting for their livelihoods, while Republicans brag about being union busters. More on that next.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Why are smart businesses graduating to NetSuite by Oracle? Because NetSuite eliminates the expense of multiple business systems by consolidating your operations together into one. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. NetSuite reduces IT costs because it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, so you can access it from anywhere. You cut the cost and headaches of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. Bringing all your major business processes into one platform improves efficiency, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the math. You'll see how you'll profit with NetSuite too. And now, by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Just go to netsuite.com/podcast25 for more information. That's netsuite.com/podcast25.
New hopes for a deal with the Writers Guild come as the auto worker strike shifts into high gear. The United Auto Workers Union has declared a strike targeting Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis in a bid to put pressure on the car makers to grant higher pay, among other improvements. The strike coincides with a burst of union momentum in the past couple of years. The Republicans, including those running for president, remain committed to their deeply unpopular anti-union stance.
I was a union buster. I didn't want to bring in companies that were unionized.
Ronald Reagan gave us a great example when federal employees decided they were going to strike. He said, you strike, you're fired. Simple concept to me. To the extent that we could use that once again, absolutely.
Donald Trump, however, is taking a different approach. He's planning to travel to Detroit to win over current and former union members instead of attending next week's second Republican primary debate. The UAW president has denounced the performative move, saying, quote, every fiber of our union is being poured into fighting the billionaire class and an economy that enriches people like Donald Trump at the expense of workers. Joining me now is Bishop William Barber, co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign and professor and founding director of the Center for Public Theology and Public Policy at Yale Divinity School. Bishop Barber, always good to see you. Just to go back for a moment to the two South Carolina candidates for president bragging about busting unions and saying, you know, Tim Scott saying, hey, you know, if you strike, you get fired. They come from a state that is where the jobs from Detroit are going. It's not, as Donald Trump lied and said, it's to China. It's down south to non-union facilities where people make less money. What do you make of this fight essentially between Americans over work and wages?
Yeah, well, Joy, you know, Nikki Haley isn't just anti-work and anti-union. She's was pro-Confederate flag supporter. She didn't pull it down until nine people were killed in a church. She's been on the wrong side of voting rights, the wrong side of restoring the Voting Rights Act. She's been against Medicare and health care and living wages. When she was governor, over 1.9 million South Carolinians were poor and low income. 38% of the state, she didn't do anything about that. 1 million people of the workforce made less than $15 an hour. She didn't do anything about that. Over 500,000 people uninsured during the pandemic. She didn't do anything about that. Neither did Tim Scott. You know, they are showing their colors. I am actually glad that this debate is happening, because what they normally want to do is hide behind culture wars, Joy, and talk about immigrants and gay people and being against wokeism. And the American people don't really get to see what they're really against is you being able to buy food, you being able to eat, you being able to pay your bills. And so it's critical that we see this. But on the other side, when you see Trump making this move, you know, autocrats have often down through history played to the working class and the poor in a time of economic tension. And the Biden administration, I think, needs to take this very seriously. They need to convene a major gathering with Marlin religious leaders and poor and low wage workers, union or non-union. And let's get living wages back on the agenda. Let's get it back in the narrative. In fact, the Senate ought to pass it. Schumer and them ought to pass it. There ought to be a major gathering, because if not, don't underestimate the ability of Trump to slip in and try to take some of these workers off with him.
There's a labor expert named Merrick Masters who said that the Detroit Three, if we're just talking about auto workers, they pay about $64 an hour. But competitors to foreign vehicles at U.S. factories where the union does not represent those workers pay about $55 an hour. Rival electric vehicle maker Tesla, which is non-union, it's down to $45 and $50 an hour. We are essentially, even with switching to electric, which is great, better for the environment, it feels like the auto industries are shifting to lower and lower and lower wage work. How do we reconcile that when we want the green jobs, but we want people to make a living wage and to make money, like you said, to be able to buy food and afford to live?
Well, until you raise the bottom wage up, you're going to actually have this ability for people to play the other wages down. That's why I'm saying that one of the things we need to do is, you know, Biden needs to say to folk, if my policy had passed, if 49 Republicans and 2 Democrats had not stood against us, 50 million people would have had a minimum wage of more than $15 an hour. And then that would have an impact upward. As long as you allow the minimum wage to be at $7, you give all this room to play. And that's why we can't allow union workers and non-union be played off against each other on the basic issue of a minimum living wage. But we have to challenge this business of green jobs and then wages constantly going down. What we're seeing in the Republicans is all they really care about is propping up billionaires and the CEOs, and their goal is profit, not profit sharing. And we've got to keep this issue out front. That's why this union movement and these strikes are so important right now in the political narrative, because without them, then the Republicans get to hide behind the culture wars. They get to hide behind where the immigrant is or against trans people. They actually don't want this conversation. Trump is smart enough to see that, even though, and that's why he's trying to move in and take peel some people off. But Democrats should take this on right now. They even though they don't have the House, they should pass everything they can in the Senate. You heard me say there should be a major mock gathering of moral religious leaders and workers, poor low-wage workers, union and non-union, right now in the midst of this, to make sure that this narrative does not change, because we can get some people exposed if we do it. Right.
Bishop William Barber, as always, thank you very much. And hopefully the Democrats are listening. Up next, I recently spoke with the wonderfully hilarious Leslie Jones about her terrific new memoir. That conversation is next. You don't want to miss it.
I'm 53 years old, Joy. I've been through a lot of presidencies. You know what I'm saying? I was around with Reagan. I've been here a long time, and I have a great sense of humor. And you have to have a great sense of humor in life, because either you're going to cry all night or you're going to laugh. I'd rather laugh.
That was the hilarious Leslie Jones back in her first ever appearance on MSNBC on this show. Back in 2020, on the importance of laughing through the pain. You may know Leslie Jones from SNL, her time filling in as host on The Daily Show, and her thirsting after our very own Steve Kornacki.
I'm rebellious from the top. When people tell me good morning, I say, no, it's not. You don't know my morning. Don't take away my choice to have a bad morning. Because when women have a choice, women have freedom.
It's like, what does this man have to do to get thrown out of Congress? He's a f***ing liar. Black people don't get believed when they actually tell the truth. This guy was like, I was a millionaire Jewish volleyball star. And y'all like, hell yeah, put him in Congress.
We're back together again, boo. Who's supposed to be for us, Steve? Us. Your khakis and your Gap shirt and your regular tie, dude, and your two-tone belt. You belong to us.
But Jones has an introspective side to her as well, which she explores in her new memoir, Leslie Effin' Jones, about what she went through to get where she is today. She writes, "One of the reasons I'm on this planet, I was built to be strong and I want to share it, pay it forward. I know it's my job to help other Black girls and women get strong like me." And I'm joined now by the one and only, the great Leslie Jones, my bestie in my head. One day we have to hear you.
Hey, baby.
Listen, so this is the book, and I'm so excited about it, and that you told your story, because I have to be honest, I have seen you do stand-up, sis. I have watched you, of course, on SNL. But, you know, I think people really don't understand what you have come through to be you. So talk a little bit about, you know, just yourself growing up and what it was like.
Well, I mean, you know, like, you have the normal middle-class family. My father was in the military. My mom did, you know, whatever odd jobs that she had at the time to, you know, to make ends meet. We had just, you know, regular life, like a regular Black family life. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't something that's just, like, totally special, but not unspecial either. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. The thing about the book that I wanted to write was to let people know that everybody has a dream, but you have to have a path to that dream. And it starts when you're younger. It starts way young, you know?
Yeah. Well, I happen to know from your book that one of your dreams was to play in the WNBA. Talk about this.
Yes.
Tell this story a little bit, how you got sidetracked from supposedly being a WNBA star to comedy.
Well, honestly, I was on a basketball scholarship, and my coach got recruited to Division I college, and he recruited me. And, you know, at the time, like, I don't know if I didn't have no dreams. I just had the thing that I knew I could do, and that was play basketball. So I was like, okay, well, when I finish in college, I'll go overseas, you know, and play. Because there wasn't a WNBA when I was coming up. So I'll just go play overseas. And one of my friends at that college entered me into a comedy contest, and that was it. That was like a sidetrack. It wasn't a sidetrack. It was a beginning. Because to me, basketball might have been the sidetrack, or basketball might have been the way to get to where I am now.
And you're really candid in your book about surviving abuse. And as you said, not as a victim, but as a survivor. But also just the world of comedy is a boys club. And so surviving the boys club, not just as a woman, but as a Black woman. Talk a little bit about that and how it felt to tell those stories.
Well, this is why I always tell everybody, like, your life is not defined by a moment. I don't think so. Everybody always like, there's one moment. No, there's a lot of moments. It's very true about your life not ending at 30 years old. You know, you live to be 56. Do you get what I'm saying? So it's not like the moment, it's a moment. And it shouldn't just define you as a person. It shouldn't define what you're going to do in this world. I always say circumstances are circumstances, but if you got the drive, If you got the willpower, you go out and do the work for it, nobody can take it from you, no matter what. So I know everybody survived things the way that they survive things, but I've never called myself a victim, you know, and I think anyone who does survive it is not a victim.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean,
but, you know, boys club everywhere. I know, you know.
Oh, listen, trust me, girl, that's a whole nother conversation. We could totally have it. But I mean, the thing is that one of the things that I do love about you is that you're not afraid to be political. And there's some comedians who say, you know what, we want to steer away from the political stuff because you want to have the biggest audience possible. But you are very open about being political and talking about political issues. Do you feel that in this sort of anti-woke environment, that can still work for a comedian on the come up that is trying to make it in the industry?
Especially if you're trying to interpret it. We're comedians. Like, we talk to regular people. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like you, Joy, can go into a classroom and teach it like straight point to point to point. me, I'm going to go and interpret what you said so people can laugh at it. Because when you laugh at it, you do examine what it is. Does that make sense? And that's what our job is as a comedian, to make all this hard stuff, to understand it and to like not have a sense of humor about it. Because Lord have mercy, it's laughable. And sometimes if oh my goodness, if we didn't have comedy, we would be losing our minds. If we didn't have a sense of humor about some of the crazy stuff that is happening right now. And as far as getting involved, how can I put this? Like, how can I not? I am a Black woman in America. So, of course, I'm already involved. Yep. Me existing, the advocacy of me just existing is an advocate for Black people. So there's no way to not be involved. I mean, I don't shun people who don't. I get it. But I've just never been that one.
Amen. You sure haven't, sis. The book is Leslie Effin' Jones. And if you want to understand this, sister, you need to get this book. Leslie Jones, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here.
You always, always, Joy.
That's tonight's readout. Be sure to tune in tonight at 10 p.m. Eastern. Lawrence O'Donnell is sitting down with Michael Wolff for his first interview since Murdoch announced that he's stepping down as chairman of Fox.
You can live out your MasterChef dream when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.